Exdermy 8, Untitled, Christmas Shenanigans of Finn McKay, Dancing, and Fall, Parts 12 through 16 of the Afarman Iowaverse by Shia Frotherden. Ratings range from general through teen. Pairing, Rodney McKay, John Shepard. Read by Library Chick, 94. Exdermy 8. If I had more energy and time, I would absolutely be writing the story of Halloween in Iowa just before Finn turns 2, when John's wondering if they should buy Finn a costume from Old Navy. Pirate? Chicken? They sell chicken suits? Yeah. Okay, that's just weird. But Rodney protests, hemming and hawing and generally suggesting that he has it all under control. And John's not convinced, but lets it be, and ignores the two charges, $37.85 and $52.34, from Home Depot, and the strange noises that come from the attic, and the way Finn keeps getting silver paint in his hair at odd points over the next 3 weeks. Twice Finn says something like, "And then I'm gonna..." before realizing he has a secret, a good one. And then he claps his tiny hands over his mouth and giggles maniacally while Rodney rolls his eyes and tells him to eat his spaghetti or there'll be no mud pies before bedtime. And then it's Halloween, and John comes home early so that they can all drive into town to the trick-or-treat festival down by the courthouse. Rodney's picked Finn up already, and as John opens the kitchen door, he can hear Rodney's muffled curses and Finn yelling, "Exdermy 8! Exdermy 8!" and Rodney saying, "Please, no, just hold still, I have to..." Well, Finn yells "Exdermiate" even louder. And then there's a squeal of glee and the shuffle of feet, and Finn comes running into the kitchen, outfitted as a Dalek, face showing through a cutout in a silver-painted cardboard panel, real lights flashing on his chest, and a sink plunger wobbling above his forehead. "Exdermiate," Finn yells with a grin, and John thinks this is the cutest damn harbinger of evil he's ever seen, but he holds his hands up in surrender anyway. Which is when Rodney comes around the corner, a long ratty scarf wound several times around his neck, and a long brown coat all but sweeping the floor. He arches an eyebrow and points a tiny flashlight, disguised with paint and plastic, in John's direction. "Sonic screwdriver," Rodney explains. "Exdermiate," Finn yells jubilantly, grabbing his pumpkin-shaped pail off the kitchen table and pushing open the screen door. "Does this mean I'm your companion?" John asks, amused. Rodney tilts his head. "You're pretty sexy," he says at last. "I think you'll do." And of course they rake in the candy, Finn staggering under the weight of it before they're done, causing Rodney to turn to John, snap his fingers, and say, "Hello, assistant, I think you should be assisting?" And it's okay, because they're all assisting the situation pretty soon, stuffing their faces with chocolate, meandering a path between houses, Finn's balance slightly off-kilter if his sink plunger tips to the left. By the time they get home, he's exhausted, so they put him to bed still in his costume, hands full of Heath bars and Rolos and fruit chews. And though they take the time to make a bacon sandwich apiece and drink a beer, it's not long before John and Rodney are headed to bed as well. Only the night's been pretty silly, and John pads back from the bathroom and slides in between the sheets, whispering, "Oh, doctor," and Rodney snorts. That's all it takes. Suddenly they're helpless with laughter, and John has to bury his face in his pillow to save his har-har-hars from waking Finn. Rodney rolls over and presses his face to John's back, and he's shaking with it, the effort of being quiet. And just when they think they're back under control, he asks, "Should I call you Rose or Martha?" And John cups him through his boxers and smirks, "What about Jack?" And they're off again, clutching their sides and exchanging kisses as they wheeze and laugh and grin and smile, and eventually they collapse in a heap, still chuckling from time to time. John doesn't remember falling asleep, but he remembers waking up only too vividly, since Finn sticks his head over the edge of the bed and yells, "Exdermiate!" at precisely 6:05 a.m. The end. Untitled. It's become a Sunday night ritual, bundling Finn off to bed before 8 p.m., crashing with an enormous bowl of popcorn on the couch, just as the opening credits of Holmes on Holmes roll. Rodney loves the righteous indignation, Holmes squawking about plumbers who cut through flooring joists or electricians who leave live wires to spark into the substandard insulation, while John just plain loves the power tools. He feels a slow burn of satisfaction every time Holmes starts pulling down drywall and reframing walls, but the burn becomes something more pressing by the time there are nail guns and cordless drills involved. Once, Holmes built a deck in the back of some woman's house, and there were screws that were, honest to God, 8 inches long, fixed in place with a drill so powerful that it made John moan just a little. Rodney's head whipped around so fast, John thought he might get whiplash, but he didn't so much as grumble, just asked, "Do you have one of those?" And John was forced to admit he didn't. He got one next birthday. It's companionable, trading quips and disparaging comments about shady contractors, Rodney asking questions about laser levels, and John trying to steady his breathing when they break out the subfloor heating system. everyone's just so competent in the way they lay tile. Which is round about the time Rodney makes his move and initiates the regular Sunday night making out that leads to Sunday night sex by 9:01 p.m. John's practically begging for it before the end titles close, and Rodney's shameless about asking HVAC questions until John's sweating and arching beneath him, hands wrapped tight around Rodney's hips, and Rodney always ends up coming so hard he thinks every week he's going to break something vital that no contractor can put back together again. Not that he's going to change the ritual. Not when it pays off in orgasms, and John Shepard's spent and smiling beside him. Not when it regularly means they start to laugh as they clean up and tumble back into bed again. Not when they reliably fall asleep, sprawled in a messy middle-aged heap, touching anywhere they can. The end. Christmas Shenanigans of Finn McKay. There was once a time in a dusty corner of a country best forgotten when John Shepard drank his body weight in cheap Taiwanese beer and woke up with a rolling stomach, a headache the size of Montana, and a pair of white briefs that were definitely not his own perched upon his head. It was, he thought at the time, the worst morning after experience of his fairly short life, especially once he found the tattoo. It's not remotely comforting to discover that the morning after a birthday party for Finn McKay, age 2, is worse, infinitely more garish, smelling of frosting, and accompanied by the kind of exhaustion that makes it imperative he eat coffee beans straight from the bag. He had no idea such morning afters could exist, but here one is, stamping its feet and grinning in his face and ensuring he gets wrapping paper jammed between his toes every time he tries to move from one room to the next. He slumps at the kitchen table, moans into his coffee, and wishes for something that isn't quite death. Baffa? He turns his head and blinks at his son. Finn sticks out a hand, clasped into a fist. What's that? Keep it for me? John takes a deep breath to fortify himself and pushes himself upright in his chair. The last time they'd played this game, he'd found himself with a fistful of earthworm guts. Okay. He opens his hand and lets Finn drop his bounty into his palm. Finn drops a penny before turning to shuffle back into the living room as fast as his footy pajamas allow. Huh, John says, staring at the coin. Finn comes shuffling back. Here, Baffa, he sings songs, offering a grime-covered quarter. John stretches out his hand again, accepting the prize. Where'd you get this, buddy? In a dirt, Finn offers, already heading back into the living room. John blinks. Well, that covers most places, he supposes. A few moments later, Finn returns, this time with a nickel that he gives to John before tugging at his jeans. The international Finn McKay semaphore for lift me up now. John hauls him into his lap, too bamboozled to do anything but comply. Monies, Finn says proudly. 31 cents, John agrees. Pretty rich. Finn nods, comfortably nestled against John's chest. Some was on her couch. John quirks a respectful eyebrow. Very enterprising. Enterprising means you're, smart. Finn beams and fist pumps his hands. His other dad had already impressed upon him how desirable a quality this is. Smart! John laughs softly. You want me to hold on to these for you? Finn shakes his head. John nods thoughtfully. So what are you going to do with your money? Daddy needs Christmas presents, Finn says, looking up at John with wide blue eyes. John blinks. Christmas presents? Finn nods. We go shops. John feels his heart do something dangerous and probably illegal that involves sharp drops and gravity-defying rolls that he'd last experienced at 7 G's. He hugs his son close, nosing at his hair. Sure. You want to go today? Now, Finn says enthusiastically. Breakfast first. Finn chews his lip. Okay, some juice. John stands with Finn on his hip and tries to work out how long he can spin out breakfast to maximize his window of coffee ingestion. The mall, 2 weeks before Christmas, with a toddler in tow, is going to beat all previous morning-after experiences into a bloody, feeble pulp. At 2, Finn's solidly opinionated about his sartorial choices, which is how he ends up strapped into his car seat wearing jeans, sneakers, a yellow sock, a blue sock, a lime-green sweatshirt with a plane on the front, a bright red and orange scarf, and a hat that has ears like Pooh Bear. He beams at John. Shops, he says, flinging out his arms. Got your money, John asks, unbuckling him. Finn clumsily pats his pocket. Monies, he says, as John hauls him out and sets him on his hip. Cart or carrying? Carrying. John narrowly avoids rolling his eyes. Fair enough. Where first? Playground. We're supposed to be shopping for Daddy. Playground! John blinks, Finn having found exactly the right frequency at which to cause his parental guidance systems to explode. Sure, he says, heading into the mall. Finn wriggles with satisfaction, and John sighs. No doubt this slip in the household rule of, Don't give in to terrorists or offspring will result in Finn doing drugs before he's 12 and dropping out of junior high to hitchhike north in search of his authentic Canadian self. Or something. There's a Starbucks en route to the indoor play area, and John insists they stop, no matter the hullabaloo kicked up by Finn McKay and his 31 cents. He feels better prepared for the paternal hover with a cup of coffee in his hand. A move he's almost perfected, staying on the outside of the play area, letting Finn run riot over the insane, soft-shaped obstacle course someone thought it would be smart to put in a mall, ready to swoop in should head injuries threaten. Finn squeals with a horrifying level of energy, swings, crawls, leaps, and slides, and eventually flings himself at his Baffa's legs, panting and grinning like a loon. "I'm tired," he huffs pleasantly. "Ready to shop now?" John asks. "Okay," Finn says, thrusting coat and hat at John and lifting his hand to be held. "How many peasants, Baffa?" John frowns as he tries to untangle the sentence. "How many presents will your money buy?" Finn nods emphatically as they wander into Barnes & Noble. 3, John says, deciding on the number arbitrarily. 3? 3. John holds up his spare hand and shows Finn 3 fingers. 1, 2, 3. Finn copies him with his own free hand. 3! John drinks his coffee and thinks fond, desperate thoughts of naps in bed and punishing Rodney for having the audacity to work a steady job. Barnes & Noble yields no suitable present in Finn's eyes, a fate suffered by Old Navy, Foot Locker, the Hawkeye store, and the Gap. Finn stands in the doorway of the Yankee Candle Company, throws back his head and yells, "Stinky poo!" and it's an uphill battle for John to persuade Finn that Victoria's Secret doesn't stock daddy underwear, especially since the thongs in the window are distractingly sparkly. Panera offers the day's first find, Finn picking out a cinnamon raisin bagel with all the confidence of a child who knows his father's snacking habits, and John slipping 2 stealth dollar bills across the counter so his kid will never realize the thing costs more than a nickel. There's nothing at the music store or the shoe emporium, and while Finn pauses for a long time in the doorway of the Tempur-Pedic mattress shop, John convinces him Target has better gifts. "But Daddy likes sleeps." "This Daddy too," John says, stifling a yawn, Finn settled on his hip. Finn hums thoughtfully, roots around in his left nostril, and pulls out an impressive-sized booger. "Snot," he says, pleased with himself, and John groans, rifling his pockets for tissues he knows aren't there. He sighs, yanks his t-shirt out of his jeans, and wipes up Finn's hand with the hem. Finn laughs uproariously. "Baffa got boogers," he cackles, headbutting John's shoulder as he giggles. "How about you keep your snot in your nose?" John asks. "It was itching," Finn grins. "You have itchy boogers?" Finn laughs loudly. "Have itchy boogers," he yells as they walk into Target. "Jesus," John murmurs weakly, feeling every eye on him. Finn looks at him. "Baby Jesus have boogers?" he asks, fascinated. By John's reckoning, that moment constitutes the 4,072nd time he's thought to himself, "I am so far in over my head." Finn selects a dog and cat wearing Santa hat's Christmas ornament as Rodney's second gift, and rounds things out with a Tonka truck that can actually move dirt. John quibbles with neither choice, suggests they buy some wrapping paper, and manfully holds back a wince when Finn picks out something in turquoise and purple with a bag of bright red bows to match. Finn solemnly hands over his remaining 26 cents to the sales assistant, while John's putting the majority of the cost on his debit card, and after they've stowed everything in the trunk of the car and made it out of the parking lot without running down other shoppers, they stop at McDonald's for Chicken McNuggets in defiance of every law of parenting laid down by Rodney, Hostess Cupcake McKay. John's in bed before Finn that evening, leaving the 14 consecutive readings of The Velveteen Rabbit to Rodney, and crawling under the covers, beaten, worn down, and all in all, a shell of a man. "You okay?" Rodney asks, much later, sliding into bed and inching up against John's side. "Christmas shopping," John sighs, rolling over to bury his face in Rodney's armpit. "Horrible, horrible, hordes, son of death." Rodney pats his head. "Did you pick up anything for Jeannie and the kids?" John makes a strangled, pitiful noise. "We could all go on Saturday," John whimpers. Rodney strokes his back. "Or I could take Finn while you find a tree." "I love you," John whispers, and with Rodney a trusty furnace beside him, he's asleep before he takes his very next breath. Come Christmas morning, there are several different wrapping styles on display beneath the McKay Shepherd tree. There's Laura Cadman's Overachiever approach, soft green wrapping paper, brown velvet ribbon, and pine cones threaded into the knot of each bow. Jeannie's gifts demonstrate the art of practical but cute, colorful paper splattered with cheery snowmen, big white bows on every box. There are corporate wrapping jobs, Restoration Hardware, Amazon, Bacon of the Month, and fair attempts at masking gifts with too much tape from both Rodney and John. Yet the focal points are, without a doubt, three enormous packages of indiscriminate shape and size, bundled in turquoise and purple paper, covered in several bows apiece, and liberally smeared with green and yellow Play-Doh. Finn beams when Rodney nudges one with a sock-clad toe. "Who are these for?" Rodney asks. "You!" Finn shouts, bouncing on the balls of his feet. And John thinks he's probably never been so goddamn touched by anything in his life as he is when Rodney unwraps his cold, stale bagel and eats it as if it's the best thing in the world. The floor is covered in shredded paper, and Rodney's truck is all set to give rides to Helmet the Sloth, a beanie toy gifted to Finn by Jacob, one of his circle of daycare friends, when Rodney nudges Finn, wiggles an eyebrow, and Finn claps his hand to his mouth with glee. "Now, Daddy?" he asks. "I think so. You need help?" Rodney asks. Finn shakes his head and runs off into the kitchen, tugging on the pantry door and disappearing inside. John quirks an eyebrow. "What are you up to?" "Oh, nothing," Rodney says airily. John snorts. "What, you think you're the only one who goes on secret shopping expeditions?" Rodney asks. "Although I managed to steer our child away from purple and turquoise paper. Were you trying to blind us? Was that your plan?" John's cutting response is interrupted by Finn, staggering back into the room, carrying a long flat box. "Oof, baffa," he says, hurling the box at John's lap, as though trying to ensure no future siblings will spring from his father's loins. John makes a deft catch, and quickly tears silver paper from the box, loosens the lid, and peers inside. "I made it!" Finn shouts, as if there's any doubt that the painting inside, a finger-etched acrylic paint abstract expression of two-year-old joy, could have come from anyone else. John pulls it out, runs a hand over the wooden frame. "Oh, buddy," he says low. Finn scrambles into John's lap. "Look, see? You and me and Daddy and Farm." He points to various globs of color that show no recognizable relationship to anything in real life, but John smacks a kiss to Finn's forehead just the same. "It's fantastic," he whispers. "And Daddy took it to shop. Shop with..." Finn points excitedly at the frame, his limited vocabulary failing him. John looks up, meeting Rodney's smile with one of his own. "Thank you," he says, warm and just a fraction off kilter, flattened by the force of feeling that's stamping itself on his heart. Rodney leans in and kisses him. "Happy Christmas," he says as he pulls away, looking unbearably smug. "Happy Christmas," Finn agrees, all but blowing out John's eardrums, and if his yelling brings on a tickle fight of the very first water, no one seems the slightest bit displeased. The end. Dancing. There's dancing at Laura and Brad's backyard reception. Lots of dancing to every kind of music, undertaken with varying level of skill according to personality, drunkenness, and age. By 10 that night, the playlist switched to slow songs, and though the kids don't heed the change in tempo, twirling in a corner of the yard as though the world will stop spinning without their help, the adults, by and large, take the cue. Brad pulls Laura into his arms, kisses her sweetly, dips her to make her laugh, and his answering smile is just as bright. The Brennemans shuffle a slow, even foxtrot. Ada dances with Mitch, who it turns out has rhythm after all. Brad's parents sway in one single spot. Two of the daycare moms spin each other around, tipsy on champagne. There are more couples, new, old, convenient, pledged, on the dance floor than John can count, and he weaves between the hangers-on to where Rodney's watching everything, smiling contentedly. John doesn't say a word, just catches him by the hand. Rodney squawks, John knew he would, and pulls back against the force of John tugging him forward. But John has the advantage of momentum, and he's a heck of a lot more sober, since he's the one they decided would drive. "Hey," he says, smiling fondly when he finds them a clear spot on the trampled-down lawn. Rodney's momentum's not as easy to stop when he's A, baffled, and B, drunk, so he careens into John's chest and tilts his head back, stares at John, mumbles, "But prom was a disaster!" And John laughs softly, kisses him right on the mouth, uses his knee to nudge him into motion. "This isn't prom," he grins. "No," Rodney says, shaking his head, then nodding, his hands winding around to John's back. "No, see, you can't, because I can't, with the... and so many feet." But he's dancing already, shuffling side to side in John's embrace, and all John has to do is raise an eyebrow to make him realize it. "Ooh," Rodney says intelligently. Then he turns a blinding grin towards John. "We're dancing," he whispers, and snickers just a little. John noses at his temple, pulls him a little closer, shifts until they're pressed cheek to cheek, smiles at their heartfelt, slow-swaying clumsiness, their sobriety and coordination only just enough for one. "Yeah," John whispers and closes his eyes, enjoying a moment he would never, in 100 years, have imagined for himself with anyone, much less a prodigiously tipsy physicist guy. Rodney says, shifting to lay his cheek on John's shoulder. "I like you an awful lot," he mumbles. even in shoes. And John's chest warms, his spine lengthens, and he stays there through three more songs, swaying and laughing and listening to anything Rodney has to say. The end. Fall. Shh, cautions John as Finn threatens to burst into a fit of giggles for the fifth time since they both scooped up big handfuls of dry leaves near the barn. He raises both eyebrows and waggles them in a hopefully conspiratorial fashion. It doesn't exactly have the desired effect upon his son. Baffa, Finn giggles, grinning. Stop it, making me laugh. John smiles slyly and gestures with his chin. With the stealth air of a special ops force, they creep closer to where Rodney stands, drinking coffee, listening to his iPod, and reflecting on something more orally pleasing than Finn's demands for more nanas, please, no doubt. He really is asking for it, John thinks. Ready? John whispers, looking over his shoulder. Finn nods fervently. 1, 2, 3. They rush Rodney with the finesse of linebackers, albeit in Finn's case, a linebacker not much over 2 feet tall and prone to falling flat on his face. Tossing leaves madly, yelling like heathens. Rodney yelps and flails, headphones coming loose, coffee spilling everywhere, leaves sticking in the collar of his shirt. Bastard! John can only manage the force of will it takes for Rodney to cut off that line of cursing before it gets good. He grins wickedly as Finn runs a wobbly ellipse around his dad, occasionally pausing to pick up the leaves again and throw them around. Hi, John offers, 2 seconds from laughing maniacally. Rodney fixes him with a glare, seemingly oblivious to the demon by way of small boy trying to attack his pants with maple leaves. You are an evil, horrible, miserable excuse for a man! John bites the inside of his cheek. Mm-hmm. Rodney narrows his eyes, and lightning fast, bends to scoop Finn up, weathering his shrieks of glee. Time to get your Baffa back, Rodney stage whispers, and Finn's eyes light up. Yes! Baffa! Know where the rabbits poop? Rodney asks him. Hey, John puts in, laughing and extending a hand in protest. We're going to stick rabbit poop down his shirt, Rodney says to Finn, who looks like it's the best idea he's ever heard. Poop, he hollers, squirming in Rodney's arms until his father obligingly sets him down. Go, Rodney yells. And so begins the mad chase around the farmhouse that causes Mrs. Gunderson, passing by in her 1986 Plymouth Acclaim, to conclude that the family Shepherd McKay has finally lost it. Not a moment too soon, she mumbles to herself as shrieks of laughter float up from the hollow and drives home with a grin on her face. By the following Sunday, it's rumored she's $27 richer, having won the ladies' knitting circle pool on when the fathers of Finn would crack. When asked for comment, she merely smiles enigmatically, but no one fails to note that she fishes Belgian chocolate out of her purse during Sunday services, her usual M&Ms having been retired for the duration of her smugly satisfied glee. The end.